Hello and welcome to DNF1. We're here in Austria for a double header. This is the Styrian Grand Prix this weekend and then the Austrian Grand Prix next weekend. It's at the Red Bull Ring in the foothills in Austria. Derek, this particular track has been on the calendar. It was the A1 ring before. It was the two tracks that we started the 2020 season. And I'm glad we're back here. Although it's Red Bull's home race and they should know the track inside out, I think it's a challenging track. It's only got 9 bends. As a track, Derek, is it this one that you look forward to?
I like Austria. It's and the fact that we're there 2 weeks on the trot means everybody gets settled in. Everybody's ready for them. It's going to be really good this weekend.
Now, when we were here last season, Derek, it was the first race of the season. And what we found is that the Mercedes, as well as other teams, were being told to stay off the curbs. The curbs are quite aggressive here. And when the cars go over the top of them, we hear this sort of buzzing sound as they continue on them. They use those red and white curbs pretty much every single bend on any track, but here they are more aggressive. But here we're 7 races in, and hopefully all the things with these things working their way loose, being covered off for this season, you would expect that.
Yes, anything vibrating or flexing or anything like that will, it's the little man with the chainsaw underneath the sausage curbs that comes up every time the cars go over them. You know, that's what the buzzing noise is that you can hear as they go over them. You know, it's him with his chainsaw going.
Well, Derek, one thing we heard last weekend to Mike Massey for the teams was that they were complaining about obviously curbs and bits that were damaging the car, and it's something that the budget cap was introduced this year. Properly, we never really heard teams complain about these things before, maybe because we weren't privy to the messages going to the race director. Between Bottas and Imola, there's £2 million worth of damage, under trees, flexi wings, or wings in general, being damaged, and teams bemoaning that it's $100,000 for these things to be replaced. I mean, is that a sign that these budget caps are... They have to be cutting into these teams, especially the Mercs and the Red Bulls that had a budget of $300-400 million before.
Yeah, it sounds like they're running short of cash or a cash flow problem, you know. And I think you can understand that when they're trying to concentrate on next year's car, where they can maybe use a little bit of stuff they're making this year for next year's. And if they're having to go and buy a new wing because it's coming off and getting smashed on a curb or things like this, they're going to start saying, well, hang on just a minute, we can't afford to do everything, you know, and we've got a proper cap next year, because everybody will be saying, well, hang on, how come theirs has got 3 extra bits on it, you know, and, you know, because we couldn't afford to put them, how can they afford to put that on when we've all got the same amount of money to spend? I think definitely coming into cause them some grief this year, because they're actually talking money now, and they never used to talk money because money was never a problem.
Yeah, it's starting to pinch the teams. The thing is, Derek, if you're spending $100,000 on a wing, how many people's jobs is that? I mean, if that's a yearly wage of $50,000 to one of the designers, a lowly designer probably, but the simple fact is that they've got to the point that they're producing wings that cost them so much as they chase performance. But part of it is their own problem to get into that situation in the first place, and the FIA's for letting things get this far out of control. The other thing I wanted to say is, obviously, Max Verstappen's leading the Drivers' Championship by 12 points over Lewis, and Red Bull are 37 points ahead of Mercedes. The aero regs obviously came in this season, so the teams that finished top of last season and the constructors have less wind tunnel time, they've got less runs there, and less CFD work. Do you think that Mercedes' performance over this season has maybe been affected by that? On top of the big aero changes we had at the start of the season, but for Mercedes to catch up, they've got less time in the wind tunnel to actually try and catch up. Do you think that's playing a part?
Yes, I think it definitely can be affecting their chances of going in and just going carte blanche, get that sorted. Now they've got to go, well, we need this sorting and that sorting. Let's concentrate on that first, and then we'll worry about the other bit. You know, and I think they're having to make compromisations over everything that they're doing now, you know.
Very true. I think that's possibly why we're hearing these messages that teams are like, look, it's costing $100,000 for that. We have to redesign that front wing anyway, and it's got to cost us another. And it is. It's becoming all about the budgets. And I think it's good in Formula One. It should be like that for many, many years. But we're finally getting to a point where we're starting to hear it having real world effects on these teams and maybe bring the field tighter together. It will all come down to next year. That's...
Yeah.
If Formula One doesn't change come 2022, the question mark then becomes, why keep watching it? If it's broken already, we get some great races for time to time, but the system has been broken for the past 20, 30 years when cash is king. And unfortunately, it became either a positive loop for the teams that were performing well were getting more money, so we're spending more, and the teams at the back were in a negative loop. They were getting less money, couldn't perform as well, and that's why we see Williams fell away so much, and why we've had such dominance for the Mercedes and Red Bull in these positions before. Right, the news this weekend, or in the run-up to this weekend, Lewis Hamilton's obviously started contract talks. He says he's happy with Bottas, but the question, Derek, is Mercedes happy with Bottas as a team member for him?
No, that's a straightforward answer to a sort of a very long question, but I don't think Mercedes are happy with him at the moment because he's not doing his job, you know. If it had been anything like it, he would have thrown his car in front of Verstappen and, you know, caused Verstappen to slide off this side of the track or whatever, you know. If he's a team player, I mean, I know there would have been all uproar that, oh, terrible. But Mercedes would have given him a big check and said, thank you very much. But, oh, I'll just move out of the way and let him pass. And it's like, oh, you give him a toe the other day, you know. I mean, No.
The defence of that position was pretty poor. I mean, I know his tyres were gone, yes. Derek, but likewise. I mean, to be fair though, Derek, even when Max got up behind Lewis, the defence was...
Lewis didn't put up much, no.
I think...
The tyres had gone, I know.
I think Bottas' performance just in general this season, the pressure's on him and he just kind of cut the mustard. Sorry, Bottas, but it's kind of how things are. I think with the potential that Russell offers, and we keep talking about it, I think it's a done deal for the end of the season.
End of the season. You know, it could happen in the summer. It all depends what happens on these next few races. If he doesn't perform, I can see them showing him the door.
Yeah, that gap opens up. Yeah, if the gap opens up over these two weekends coming up and Bottas is not playing the part, then, yeah, I could see them pulling the trigger mid-season. We mentioned it in the last race podcast, Derek. I know you weren't there, but we did say that Mercedes will move Russell in under the guise of we need him to get up to speed for the 2022 season, which is a fair thing to do. They won't do it like Red Bull and say you've been underperforming. They'll just turn around and try and say, well, he's been performing okay, he's had some bad races and this has happened and that's happened, but you know what, we're thinking about the team here, and I think Toto especially is thinking about the team because it's his cash that's up, you know. His part of the team is him. So we lose contract talks, Derek. Do you think he's looking for a one-year extension, or do you think he's now looking, because I've started the contract talks now, do you think Lewis is looking for a contract to 3 years, 2 years? What do you think his mindset is? What do you think Mercedes want from him?
I think they'll look at a contract for taking him up to 2025.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
And there are new other regulation changes coming in 2025.
Yeah.
So I think that'll take him up. And if he wins this year and he wins next year, it'll take him to the 10.
Yeah.
I am being very, very pessimistic here, you know, but in theory, that should take him to the 10 world championships and, you know, draw a line under it there, say, follow that. Let's see who can be dominant for the next 10 years. You know, which driver's going to be, which team's going to be dominant and take 10 titles. You know, and it's a nice round number, it's 10, you know, it's not 11 and it's not 9.
I love
nine,
how you see that. It's 10 world championships, it's just nothing. But no, I know what you mean. Look, the thing is, Max's contract's up in 2023. If Lewis's contract only goes to the end of 2023, do you think that'd be something quite telling? Do you think Mercedes would then be looking at a Russell-Max combination? I mean, that's assuming that Mercedes is still a dominant force.
Right.
If everything changes...
I was going to say to you, it all depends on Red Bull and Max. If Max manages to win the championship this year, then, you know, I think he'll stay there for the rest of his life, you know, because I don't think he'd want to go to Ferrari. I don't think he'd want to go to Mercedes if they're on a descendant.
Oh, you know,
and
what?
I don't think he...
You know what'll happen, Derek? It's like footballers. They'll be like, no, I don't want to go to Mercedes. And then when the contract comes round, they're taking off their T-shirt going, I've always had this Mercedes T-shirt. I had one on the wall when I was a young kid. And then off they go to Mercedes.
Luke, I've got a Mercedes tattoo on my...
I've had it since I was five. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Cash is king,
right,
Derek.
Still cling film over it, yeah.
It's the same with all the people that went to Ferrari. I've always wanted to drive a red car. Yeah, yeah. You can go buy a Vauxhall Astra and paint it red. Talking of Red Bull, Perez hoping for a contract extension. When Perez was booted out of Aston Martin, Vettel was coming in to sell cars at Aston Martin. And Perez was like, it's okay, I'll take a sabbatical. I've got my plans arranged for 2022. Clearly he doesn't. It was smoke and mirrors, Perez.
What? Well, he might have already had the Red Bull contract, and he might have already got, in theory, signed for 3 years if he performs, sort of thing. You know, he just has to perform this year. And I think, I must say, I think he is, he's doing better than any of the others have done.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull have got to turn around and see this is the best combination. And they're getting the best performances out of the team and the wingman stroke team member. And that's part of the reason they're ahead in the Constructors and the Drivers' Championship. It's not just because Max is doing a great job. Perez is doing a great job as well. And to be fair, could you imagine if he'd been on the ball for the start? This could be a completely different season we're looking at. Although the signs have now appeared that Red Bull have maybe got stronger performance in certain areas. But unfortunately, Perez had to get up to speed with the car and what could have been. But Perez, again, they might look at an extension of his contract for another couple of years. 2023 would also be a good time for them to transition. So if Perez gets a two-year contract here, I think it'd be a good thing for Red Bull, give them stability. And the sooner they get that signed, the better. And Max will be happy because Max's not going to worry about a young gun coming in. But how do you think it's going to affect Albon, Gasly? These two guys are like, I want that Red Bull seat. I've got something to prove. I want to get back in there. And do you think we'll see Albon somewhere else if Perez signs a two-year
Formula 3, probably.
Yeah. That's where they seem to all go to.
They all seem to disappear into Formula E, and I think anybody would be quite happy to have Alex Albon in Formula E.
Moving on to Aston Martin next. Small inroads. Aston Martin have improved slightly over the past two or three late races. There's been a lot of praise coming for Stroll for Seb being in the team. The briefings and stuff are all better, and it does feel like Seb is trying to make a difference in that team. Do you think he's trying to make the team his, keeping in mind that Stroll, dad's lad, etc., etc.? Do you think his experience will make that team his?
No. It's a simple answer. I know I keep coming up with simple answers, but I think you will find that Seb will get settled in this team a lot easier than being in any other team. Seb will manage to do it, but it will never be his team. It will always be Lance Stroll's team because daddy pays the bill. And that's the only reason Lance Stroll is in motor racing, is because his dad gives a big check and goes, let him drive. There you go. Yes, we'll have Vettel. Yes, you can have Vettel, but my lad still gets to give first choice of everything that we have.
I mean,
I signed the check.
I've said it in the past that they brought Seb in to sell cars, etc., which I think is part of it, a big name in the Aston Martin brand. And I think it's good for the brand. It's not a bad thing. But I think if Stroll's coming out and saying that, I do think Stroll is saying this because he wants to either emulate him, or, you know, he can learn a lot from him. And at some point, Seb might say, I've had enough. And Stroll is going to have to stand on his own two feet and actually be, or try and be, Sebastian Vettel, I guess, because that'll be the last person that's maybe had an influence on him. But I think Aston Martin, at the moment, Aston Martin's sitting sixth in the Constructors' Championship on 40 points. Most of those points came for the past two races, realistically. AlphaTauri is on 45, fifth, just ahead of them. Now, Aston Martin, I think they've blown the chance to wind up being third or fourth in the championship, because we've got Ferrari, although we'll see where Ferrari go the rest of the season. They've got an investigation into last week's race and stuff. It's really in-depth, whereas they kind of just say, well, look, the car was crap on that particular track, but we'll wait and see what, if they publish details of it, and see if Ferrari can come up with a reason for that, because it was such a sweeping change of performance. But 94 points against Aston Martin sitting on 40, it's a bit of a tall order. We've still got plenty of races to go this season, I get that.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
And McLaren in 110, and I think the gap actually up to McLaren, because we know McLaren is going to score consistent points. They've got a driver combination and a car there that will score consistent points over the rest of the season. So I think the best that these three teams, Ferrari, AlphaTauri and Aston Martin, fourth in the championship is where they've got to be aiming. Do you think Aston Martin over the rest of the season, if they continue the way they're going, can get up and catch up with Ferrari? It's a huge gulf, but still impossible.
Just takes a couple of races, just takes a couple of DNFs, and the whole thing changes. I think, yes, they have a chance, and I would like to see them come back, because they had so much potential that was robbed of them by the change in the aero regulations, which, you know, okay. So I'd like to see them get up to if they can get up to fifth, I think they would be happy. Take fourth if they can, but I think they would be happy with fifth.
Is anybody's guess?
Probably.
Even though Ferrari have got that. Yeah, even though they've got that big gap between them and sort of fifth and sixth, I still think if the problems arise at Ferrari, it feels like the team will implode. We know they've already said that they're not going to develop this car any further. Everything's focused on 22, which is great. Great for them, but it does give these chances to Aston Martin and stuff to maybe get up there and catch up with them. Moving on to the next thing. Obviously, we've been talking about flexi wings for the past three or four podcasts, weekends. This here is the last race where they've got a bit of leeway on the wings before next week's Austrian Grand Prix, where the rules will be hard set. Your flexi wing is no longer going to be flexi past this point. Increased weight loads on the checks and tests. The past race plus this one, I don't think it's having that much an effect. I think the teams have already started moving across to be compliant. And we saw that in France, there was a lot less talk about flexi wings because it's now going to be policed more. And the teams have literally no time to really develop it. So I think by the time we got to France, most teams had to have developed and put into place fixes for it. But this is the last weekend for any small flex.
I'm hoping they've just gone and thrown all their eggs in one basket and gone, look, let's just take it off, put everything back as it should be. Let's race as a car and let's have a race without any secret little weapons or, you know, I don't know. I just think they should. I think next year will be better because everything will be standard and, you know, we'll have a lot more chance at seeing fair racing.
Look, we spoke about this before we came on here. Formula One's all about the grey areas. That's really where F-ducts, S-ducts, double diffusers, blown diffusers,
pull systems, pushing pull systems.
All these things, they look at where they can find the grey areas in the rules and they can get away with it because it's a grey area and the FIA then have to police it the following year and so on and so forth. The other grey area that really hasn't been spoken about a lot in the past, but the teams have started making some noise about, is the pit stop equipment, the equipment that they use, isn't that right, Derek?
The FIA are looking to slow down pit stops because some teams are complaining that other teams have got an advantage through technology and grey areas, as we have said, to speed up their pit stop changes so that they can get a better getaway. So these sub-2-second pit stops that we've been having, that might be a thing of the past, and we might back to half an hour waiting for the man to bring a tyre from the factory to the car. And that, you know, let's hope that it's just a storm in a teacup and that it's not really going to slow us down, because I really like seeing these guys work because they do work really hard to the lads that are doing the pit stops. They should be the ones getting the praise for actually doing it, not some computer in a room in deepest south of England.
The simple solution for this would be that everybody winds up getting the same equipment. That's really got to be the answer to this. But then there becomes a cost involvement. So if Red Bull and Merck are using digital torque meters on the wheel guns, etc., surely we must be in a situation that those particular wheel guns are going to cost 20,000 each or 10,000 each in comparison to the ones at the other end of the grid where the teams can only afford the £2,000 wheel guns.
With the spanner and, you know, and the wheel, the spiders.
The simplest fix for this is surely everybody, they standardise the wheel guns, they standardise the equipment for the pit stops to give it a more level playing field. And look, it might only be a second here and a second there, but the bottom line is if they come in and do a pit stop and it's a close battle, that can be the difference. Track position makes all the difference. And I welcome these types of things, and I think it's unfair to the teams that couldn't spend their way out of the situations. The actual calendar for Formula One has changed again. We expected that at the start of the season, Derek. There's still some tracks that are quarantined in certain ways. So the change to the calendar is Turkey is coming in to replace Singapore, which is round 16, and that's going to be the 1st to the 3rd of October. Turkey, as you said, Derek, was on the calendar already to replace Canada, and then COVID restrictions, they took that away, and that's why we're here effectively in Austria for a second race. And there is still some others. Japan still got a question mark over it. Mexico, Brazil, and Australia, which are all into October and November. All remains to be seen. They have to cancel the race first before they can then look to actually get a replacement. But it then means that we're going to have Netherlands, Italy, Russia, then Turkey. And then again, the question mark would be, if you're in Turkey, the next step would be to Japan. if Japan's not going to do it, we'll probably have another European race somewhere within that area, because the step thereafter
back to Silverstone.
Well, Silverstone, we that sort of weather in October would be quite interesting. But
and they've just announced that Silverstone can have full capacity this week for the weekend, so that will be interesting.
Do you think maybe after Turkey, you mentioned Silverstone, but we've got the Nürburgring, which we went to last season at about the same time. And we remember it was only sort of 9 degrees, and DAS kind of helped Mercedes there, but it was cold, it was cloudy, it was rainy. A possible return, that could reappear in the calendar as well.
That would be good. That would be really good. If they had to do that, that would be brilliant.
And that would again be mid-October. That would be the 8th to the 10th of October, that weekend, to replace Japan. But Japan needs to be cancelled first before they start putting it to other tracks. But I'm sure in the background, they are already going to tracks and saying, look, if we need you for that time, can we have this track? So I think that would be a good replacement for Japan. Mexico, Brazil and Australia, I'm not entirely sure, would be in the US. Double up the US, give them an extra week, so on and so forth. But all remains to be seen. And then we come to the changes that are proposed and will be happening for Abu Dhabi. We've been going there for 10 years, and only now, Derek, I don't know, it's taken them 10 years to basically go, we're not getting the overtakes we want here, and it's not the best race to finish off the season. And finally, they've went, we're going to change some of the tracks to help overtaking. How's it taking them so long? They should have known that after the first race.
No, it won't overtake, but it'll just...
That's, proof of the pudding,
Derek.
Paint
and dry.
Proof of the pudding. But I think there'll be a whole new lease of life for these tracks that we bemoan there's no overtaking. You go to Spain with next year's cars, and I think it'll be a world of a difference. And if it's not, then Formula One is up.
Seen its day and will be sailing into the sunset. Paddle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looking at the weekend ahead, Derek, weather-wise, where we actually are, we obviously had a rainy race for the second race of last season. It was heavy rain for qualifying. We all remember Lewis Hamilton's qualifying there. Absolutely outstanding. This weekend, the air temperature is looking between 22 and 21 degrees, but there is a 40% chance of rain, showers, sweeping through the area. I mean, if it's not this weekend, next weekend, we'll probably have rain at some point. It is only a 40% chance, so we will wait and see, but it would spice up the race a bit, wouldn't it?
Oh, definitely. A bit of water everywhere helps.
So the timings for the weekend, actually at the moment as we're recording this, practice one is ongoing. Max Verstappen leads the way at the moment on a 105.9, but he's only done 5 laps. Hold off judgment on the practice sessions. We've got practice 2 will be at 2 p.m. today, British summertime. And then tomorrow, Saturday, we've got P3 at 11 a.m. and then qualifying's at 2 p.m. British times. And then on Sunday, we've got the race at 2 p.m. as well. Mercedes need to bounce back this weekend. That gap, although it's only 37 points in the constructors, but also the 12 points to Max, both Lewis and Mercedes need to bring that closer. Do you think Red Bull benefit for home advantage at this race, or do you think it's just another track, really?
It's just another track. If there were fans in and things like that, yes. You know, if there were lots of fans in, it would make a difference. But yes, they should have had lots of practice on it. But as you say, everybody and his dog can play on the simulator nowadays. So Everybody should have had a lot of practice on this track. You know what I mean? So it's a great track. It's going to be a great weekend. And I'm looking forward to it. So let's just sit back, buckle in, and enjoy the ride.
Well, that pretty much covers it off. There's nothing else for me to say except it's goodbye for me.
And it's goodbye from him. Stay safe. Take care. Enjoy the weekend. See you for the post-quali podcast and the post-race podcast. Take care. Bye for now.
This has been a Beautycat production for DNF1.